Those are the perceptions that seem to contribute the most to a sense of motion. Finer details like fence posts are not suppressed, maybe because there's no need to suppress them. Rapid eye motions usually turn them into a blur anyway. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. I'm Don Glass.
WILL programs are made possible by Bevere Cafe. Bevere Cafe offers specialty coffees, breakfast featuring a choice of cold and hot breakfast items from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., and to-go sandwiches and salads for lunch. Bevere Cafe is student-operated in Bevere Hall, corner of Gregory and Goodwin, Urbana.
In sports, Iowa is about to begin a news conference to discuss the future of its men's basketball program. Athletic Director Gary Barta will be at the news conference this afternoon. Spokesman Matt Weitzel says Coach Todd Licklider will not be there. The Hawkeyes, who had just two upperclassmen play significant minutes, finished 10-22 in posting their first 20-loss season. They have had a losing record for three state seasons under Licklider. Licklider has 4 years left on his contract, which pays him $1.2 million a year. He spent six seasons at Butler before succeeding Steve Alford, who left for New Mexico. Kansas is the unanimous number one in the Associated Press's final men's basketball poll of the season. The Jayhawks were on top of the poll for the 15th week today, matching the most time at the top since Duke went wire-to-wire in 1991-92. The overall number one seed in the NCAA tournament, Kansas received all the first-place votes from the 65-member national media panel. Kentucky, Duke, and Syracuse, the other number one seeds, are second, third, and fourth. Ohio State is fifth, followed by West Virginia, Kansas State, New Mexico, Villanova, and Purdue. The surgery on David Beckham's torn Achilles tendon has been completed. A person familiar with the operation tells the Associated Press that the operation was successful. The 34-year-old midfielder is expected to miss the World Cup. And today's Grapefruit League schedule has the St. Louis Cardinals playing the New York Mets, the Chicago Cubs take on the Colorado Rockies, and the Chicago White Sox host the Kansas City Royals in the Cactus League today. That's sports.
WILL programs are made possible by English Hedgerow, full-service florist located at University and Lincoln Avenue, Urbana. English Hedgerow can coordinate your next party with fresh flowers, innovative designs, and a different accent.
This week from Chicago Public Radio, we have a series on juvenile justice, inside and out. Today we begin by taking you to a mysterious place, a place that's shut off to the public and the media. We're talking about youth prisons. Illinois has eight of them. Thousands of kids are sent every year to be rehabilitated, educated, equipped with skills, and to be turned away from crime before it becomes a lifestyle. We've begun to get a look inside, and Robert Wildebohr of Chicago Public Radio Station WBEZ takes us now to the sprawling St. Charles prison campus, 40 miles west of Chicago. Behind the multiple layers of fencing and barbed wire in a cluster of buildings on a gently sloping hill is Owen's Cottage, where the story begins.
Shortly after the shift change, at 6 a.m., while it's still pitch black out, one of the guards in Owen's Cottage flips on the electricity. The prisoners in this living unit are 14, 15, and 16-year-old boys, some lanky, some pudgy, and one kid who hasn't hit that awkward growth spurt yet. He's so small, the only word to describe him is cute. The others call him Big Man. They're all sleeping quietly, but as the switch is thrown to send power to the two wings, lights and radios that were on the night before when the power was shut off, they scream back to life.
She does it. She says she can't be the only one that does stuff wild when they get drunk. Can we see what up?
Then Dan Jones, one of the two guards in Owens, he slides open the heavy metal door on the first room on the A wing.
The first count in the morning is a physical count to make sure.
As he opens each door, the thick hot smell can almost make you gag. It's the smell of two teenage boys who have been sleeping in a small, poorly ventilated room that doubles as their bathroom. The kids pull their thick gray blankets over their heads.
No, they really don't want to get up early.
Jones then collects trash, one cell at a time, and makes the kids sweep up.
Washington Lennon this week?
I'm good.
You good?
Make them, but I would rather they would.
Some kids try to go back to sleep or listen to the radio. A couple guys rap, the sound escaping from their cell through the small slit between the metal door and the cinder block wall.
You can see I'm in DOC. Yeah. I'm finna get out in about 3 weeks. Okay.
Lucky kids whose parents put a couple $100 in their commissary accounts can buy a TV from the prison and have that in their cell. The TVs and the radios are made of clear plastic, so you can see the electronics, and more importantly, so you can't hide any contraband. By 7:30, kids are getting restless and want to know when they're going for breakfast.
About 10 minutes. Make sure everything's taken care of.
Hey, man, you're spinning us. You just told us we had 15 minutes, now we got 10 minutes. Don't like.
Well, let's see. You count down, right?
Yeah.
Count down.
It's 8 a.m. before Jones starts opening all the cell doors so the kids can go to breakfast. They've spent almost
right
2 hours killing time since they were woken up for that first daily count.
Just make sure all your property is put up. Make sure your bed's made and all your property put up.
They come out of their cells and line up in their wings and then move to the rec room.
We step out on the black line. Hey, line up, do what you're supposed to do.
This black line on the edge of the red carpet.
What we do every day, y'all.
Let's hold a conversation. Hold a conversation as of this moment.
At 35, John.
35.
This is the first of many, many times the boys will line up today. They file out the door. The boys all wearing the same navy blue cotton pants with elastic waists and navy blue winter coats.
Come on, step off.
They walk silently several hundred feet to the dining hall. The guards look for any gesture or whispered insult that could escalate to a fight. All the movements of these kids are carefully orchestrated over walkie-talkies by so-called movement specialists.
43, Pierce Cottage, Taylor.
They make sure that no two cottages get too close to each other in the dining hall or the school or even on the roads and walkways of the prison campus. The 35 kids file into the dining hall and wait while Jones directs them to the cafeteria-like counter.
Next five.
You don't pick what you eat. Each kid is handed a plastic tray and takes a seat.
Supposed to be sausage patties and cereal. And then juice, milk, and they give us bread and jelly, too.
The food is obviously institutional grade, but fairly well balanced with a couple fruits and vegetables. And kids who come from homes where meals are sporadic tend to gain weight in prison. What's astounding is that there are two cottages in the dining hall, about 70 teenage boys, and yet it's silent. No one's allowed to talk.
We have so many youth to move that they have to eat and go.
After just 10 minutes, the kids are done breakfast, and they walk to the school where they're searched and patted down.
Teachers, the youth are entering the building.
I'm asking too much. Be quiet. So we can release you upstairs.
We spent a couple days in classes at St. Charles, and tomorrow we'll take a close look at this part of the day. For now, we fast forward to more lining up, a 10-minute lunch, and then back to Owens. They go in pairs to their cells for a bathroom break, but soon they are let out for rec time, the prison term for free time. Prison employees actually use the term recreate as a verb, as in, now we let the boys recreate. They play ping pong and they sit around and chat. I'm not allowed to talk to the kids on mic, but as I move around, probably 20 kids whisper to me that this is a show, that they never get rec time at lunch. The highlight of the afternoon is an hour in the weight room, which also has more ping pong tables and some video games. It's in the basement of an old gym which is no longer in use, one of many buildings on the St. Charles campus that have been closed but not torn down. A half dozen boys gather around a weight set.
I bet you can't do 200. I bet he can't do 200.
Woo. They put the pin at the bottom of the weights, 200 pounds.
Six, man, break it up like
seven,
that.
Mom.
The young man bench presses 10 reps. In the corner, an employee stands by a small table.
My name is Julie Schmidt. I'm leisure time activities specialist. That includes recreating the kids.
Her table is filled with games.
Connect Four, dominoes, chess, cards.
Two boys walk up with ping pong paddles and a crushed ball.
What happened?
Yeah, I was trying to run and get it so it wouldn't interfere with the other game.
That happens. Won't be the first time.
Right next to Schmidt's table is a chin-up bar. Bobby Moore, the superintendent for the prison, he works to suppress his laughter as he does an impressive one-armed pull-up. It's not like he always hangs out with the kids in the weight room. He's been following me around all day, as has a press person from Governor Pat Quinn's office, who's been taking lengthy notes on everything I see and hear. Moore has been with the department for 25 years, and as he walks around the prison, kids approach him with problems, and others just say hi, many addressing him as Mr. Bobby Moore, as if it's one name.
I can tell you, you have guys who are in here from anything from auto theft to murder, and I would challenge you to be able to tell me the difference.
There are 200 troubled boys at St. Charles and plenty of fights, but Moore says the key to minimizing them is being proactive and not letting things slide. As we talk, he pauses and gives a questioning look at a young man whose rowdiness is edging towards obnoxiousness. The young man gets the message. At the end of the hour, kids line up once again, go to the dining hall for another silent 10-minute meal. After dinner, Officer Bolden from the afternoon shift pats the boys down looking for pens and pencils or anything that they could use to hurt themselves or others.
That's just a constant everyday warfare. It's almost like trying to win the war, but the only thing about war is in. This never stops. It's an ongoing process.
By 5 p.m., they're ready to head back to the cottage for the night for showers and maybe some time in the rec room.
And we'll be conducting showers one room at a time, so that will be somewhat time-consuming. But it should be done probably, hopefully, by 8:30, 9 o'clock the latest. And then the young men will pretty much start shutting down and get ready for the same procedure as what you experience at 5:45, 6 o'clock in the morning, waking up, cleaning the rooms, breakfast, and school all day. So overall, at this point, no incidents, which is a good day for all of us.
Robert Wildebohr reporting from Chicago. Rob continues the story tomorrow, looking at how little education some kids are getting. It's 8 minutes before 3 o'clock. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Our technical director today is Henry Frain. Well, coming up next to take us to near the top of the hour of this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, a report from National Public Radio. Allison Arbor reports on how to get kids and families to eat better.
The first incentive is financial. Let's call it bucks for broccoli or cash for carrots. Can you make people buy healthier food? Would that work? I put the question to Dean Carlin, a behavioral economist at Yale University.
So in the case of broccoli, you want to find out who's not eating broccoli and then pay them to eat broccoli.
But Carlin says financial incentives for food purchases could be tricky. For instance, how much cash is needed to get people's attention? Researchers at the University of Buffalo have just finished a study looking into this. They recruited a bunch of moms to shop for groceries in a simulated supermarket and gave them each the same amount of money. The researchers manipulated the prices a couple of different ways. First, they made the healthy foods, items such as fruits and vegetables, a lot cheaper.
And then we looked at the purchasing patterns of these mothers as if they were purchasing these foods for their family for the week.
Researcher Len Epstein says the mom's choices were somewhat predictable.
They did buy more of the healthier foods.
But here's the rub. Since the healthy foods cost a lot less, the moms had money left over. And what did they do with it? Well, Epstein says they used it to buy more junk food.
So when you put it all together, their shopping baskets didn't have improved nutrition. They had basically the exact same percentage of fat and percentage of carbohydrates.
So if subsidizing healthy foods leads to the unintended consequence of people spending more on junk, might there be another way to structure incentives? Well, when the researchers tried a different price manipulation, basically placing a hefty tax on junk food, they found that this stopped people from buying so much of it. So are taxes more effective than subsidies?
That's what our data looks like.
And behavioral economist Dean Carlin says the findings are not a big surprise.
No, not at all. People are more responsive to price increases than decreases.
Carlin says a junk food tax would not change families' diets overnight, but it could serve as a first step to raise awareness of bad habits, such as the kinds of things we choose to snack on. For example, kids like sweets.
Skittles.
But research shows that limiting kids' choices can really make a difference. These middle schoolers in Somerville, Massachusetts, are not allowed to bring Skittles to school. In fact, they can't bring snacks at all.
I used to bring Doritos every day, but
They gave us juicy fruit.
Fresh fruit is the only option Marcos Azurbido and all of his classmates have for snack these days.
We're eating apples.
There's green wand and red wand and yellowish wand and like orangey wand.
On their way out the door for morning recess, the kids reach into bins filled with apples and bananas.
Once they get it every single day, once it's right in front of their face, they'll have like three bananas. They'll eat a ton.
Seventh grade teacher Sharon Lemaire says she couldn't convince many kids to eat fruit at snack time when parents were sending in chips or sugary treats.
But now that it's the rule all the way across, the kids are really into it, and then it's not me being the mean bad teacher that's making them not eat their Doritos.
Lemaire says as the whole school culture has changed, kids may start thinking a little differently about food choices at home. Allison Aubrey, NPR News.
The Big Short, the divide between Wall Street people who bought into the subprime market and the quirky few who bet against it.
From one angle, it looks like a gorgeous woman in profile, and from another angle, actually what you're doing is staring into the face of a horrible old witch.
The good, the bad, and the toxic in the mortgage market before the fall. Author Michael Lewis later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 on WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana.
Earth and sky.
The massive earthquake that struck Chile in February 2010 might have shortened Earth's day by 1.26 microseconds, according to calculations by a NASA scientist. An Earth Sky Facebook friend asked us how, and the answer is for the day to get shorter, Earth's rotation has to speed up.
The Earth's rotation changes all the time. It speeds up and it slows down and it wobbles as it rotates. And these changes are caused by anything that moves mass around on the Earth.
That's Richard Gross of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He's the scientist who performed the calculations.
This is just like a spinning ice skater who will spin faster as she brings her arms closer to her body. The net result of the mass motion that was everywhere within the Earth was to rearrange the Earth's mass in such a manner that it's brought it a bit closer to the Earth's rotation axis, causing the Earth to rotate a bit faster and the length of the day to be a bit shorter.
Dr. Gross said there won't be any practical consequences from the shortening of our day. In fact, winds and ocean currents have an even bigger effect on the length of the day than this earthquake did. In the end, that change is too small to detect, even with the most sophisticated instruments. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Programs on WILL are made possible by McKinley Presbyterian Church and Foundation, a welcoming and inclusive community, and builders of the first green residence hall on the University of Illinois campus to use geothermal heating. Information about living at Presby Hall is available at presbyhall.com.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. Online at will.illinois.com. The forecast for Illinois and Indiana prepared by Scott Althoff. This afternoon, northern and northwestern Illinois, partly to mostly sunny in northern Indiana, and in central sections of the two states, mostly cloudy with some breaks in the clouds developing. Elsewhere, cloudy. Highs ranging from 57 in northwestern Illinois to 45 in eastern Indiana. Tonight in northern and central sections, partly cloudy. In southern sections, mostly cloudy. Lows ranging from 32 in northeastern Indiana to 40 in the south. Tomorrow in northern and central Indiana, sunny. Elsewhere, partly to mostly sunny. Highs ranging from 54 to 58. This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with some breaks in the clouds developing through the afternoon. The high near 50.